Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, a fitting farewell for a football great, Polly Farmer. Where it all went wrong for West Coast in round 23, and can they win it from fifth position? And Duff and I pick our all-Australian teams.
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is!
The stadium holds its breath!
It's Duff and Quarters!
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Hello, everybody. It's the Duff and Quarters podcast. The home and away season is over. We have a top eight.
Oh, here we don't we?
We have a bottom 10. And we have West Coast getting kicked in the guts, I think, by Hawthorn in round 23, dropping them to fifth, taking away the double chance and putting the roadmap between them and back-to-back flags five plane flights away.
Could be the most significant loss in their history, which is a storied history. That was a real, it may prove not to be, but it was a huge amount on the table. Very, very poor effort, really.
So let's move on with the news of the day or the news of the week first. Glenn, you were at the great Graham Farmer's funeral yesterday. Funeral at Optus Stadium.
I had the great honour of being there. There's a nice setting too in the Riverview Room at the Optus Stadium, which overlooks a really significant Noongar piece of water, really. That was a great meeting place for them. So significant that it was there. Really well, the great tribute, the actual service. Very well emceed by Russell Wolfe. Speakers just did a great job. Kim and Dean Farmer, among others. It was really great to go from there to the Camfield, where, again, there was a personal connection. Tony Bahagia, one of the owners, was put a bit of a feed and a few drinks on because he was Polly was a bit of a mentor of his when he was a kid.
Yep.
Just wandering around there, bumping into the likes of Noddy McCauley, who spoke very, very well as a tribute to Polly at the service. Sid Jackson, just the greats of the game were there. Just wandering around, having a beer and a chat with him was a real honour and a really good way to send the great man, Graham Farmer, off. It's not lost on you that just down the road was Polly's Pipe, and I think the procession went through there and with traffic cordoned off, and so it should have been. It's his tunnel, so I think everything was a great tribute. And I think among the eulogies, while his career itself was celebrated and the fact that probably no individual has had more influence on the game in terms of the way it's played. But it was also the selfless nature of the man and everything he did. The Graham Farmer Foundation, a lot was made of what they have achieved. So it was a really, everything knitted together really well, and I was really pleased for the family.
Great player, great person, and fitting that he was sent off with a state funeral, I think.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
And certainly fantastic that they did the great man justice. And also fantastic that he got to make one appearance at Optus Stadium before he went.
Very well put, Duff. I didn't really think about that one, but yeah, he did. He deserved to.
Absolutely.
And we see there's a, even at the Camfield, you're looking out on the Nicky Winmar statue. I think there will be a Polly Farmer statue there sooner rather than later. And so there should be. And his should be the first statue you see as you come off the Matagara Bridge.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think that's pride of place. I think that's the one you want there. All right, moving right along. Let's get this out of the way.
Where do you want to start?
Well, let's put it on the line right now. Who is your premier now?
Richmond. I've done my math on who wins. I won't go through it all, but I've got Brisbane playing Richmond in on Grand Final day.
Okay.
I think Brisbane wins the first week of the finals at the Gabba, and I think Richmond gets them at the MCG.
So let's put it in context for West Coast. They've dropped from second and two games and percentage inside the top four 2 weeks ago to fifth.
Seven quarters of footy, Duff. I mean, the quarter time of the MCG, that game against Richmond, everything was looking rosy.
They're four goals up. They look like the best team in the comp. I had a mate text me from Melbourne saying, put down your glasses, here's the Premier. And then it started to rain and Richmond got back in the game and Richmond won the game. And then we'll talk a little bit more later about what happened on Saturday night against the Hawks. But where have you got West Coast finishing? And is it a case of
they
can't, or you just don't think they
can? No, they can. I think they can. And the one X factor here is Nick Nat. If Nick Nat comes back into that side, it lifts what is an already great midfield, lifts it up a notch even further. Yes, they can win. I'm really worried about contested possession. I'm really worried about their defence. A lot of areas I'm worried about. But you know what? You've got a week's break. They're fifth. They're still in with a chop-up. I just think for a West Australian team in particular, really, really hard outside the four. I actually think top two is really hard outside the top two. But top four, it makes it a lot easier. Fifth, the travel is a real burden. As you pointed out yesterday, you know, that's three times they have to travel. So
three in a row. That's the big concern. And don't forget that there's a fair chance one of those games will be Collingwood, and Collingwood will drag him into the trenches and make him play combat footy.
Yep.
And there's a reasonable chance that one of those games will be Brisbane at the Gabba.
I've got West Coast winning week one. I've got Geelong, West Coast, Western Bulldogs, Brisbane winning week one, and I've got West Coast playing Collingwood the first semi at the G. I've got West Coast winning that.
Yeah.
Playing Brisbane at the Gabba week three.
Yeah. And even if they win that, it's a 6-hour plane flight back, and then back to Melbourne on Thursday to get ready for the grand final parade and the grand final. And I do remember the 1991 final series when they got tipped upside down by Hawthorn in the first week. They had to go on the road 3 weeks in a row. And Mick Malthouse, for years afterwards, said he looked in the players' eyes at halftime in that grand final. They were in the game. They were only 10 points down. And he said, I just saw nothing.
Mm.
He said there was nothing left.
And the following year, he saw everything.
He saw everything. Yeah. He saw everything he needed to see. And they were actually further down against Geelong the next year than they were against the Hawks that year.
So I've got the Dogs winning week one. I've got them getting through to Richmond in week two, and Richmond winning that. So Richmond will go through the opposite way, and I've got them playing Geelong in a prelim, which would be a crackerjack prelim. So that'll be interesting. They had a good one a couple of years ago. So I've got Richmond playing Brisbane at the G, but grand final day. But Duff, if I knew, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be in the Bahamas somewhere.
Yes, exactly. Brisbane. Can they win it? Based on what you saw.
Of course they can. I don't think they will. I think that they'll be done on grand final day, but they'll win at the Gabba, and of course they can. They weren't. It was really Richmond jumped them at the weekend, and then it was parity really after that. So I think they would have gained a lot out of that. They won in a lot of areas, Brisbane, so they're not too much panic out of that game at all. And yes, they can win it. Of course they can. I still worry. And again, now we're going into final stuff, and it's a different game altogether.
Okay. What went wrong for West Coast on Saturday night against your boys?
Firstly, they were panicked when they had the footy. Hawthorn, amazingly, this work on the mark with almost encroaching on meterage. They really cramped their style coming out of the back line. They really did. So it was really masterful tactics by Hawthorn. Did they want the footy a bit more? I think so. And I'm not sure whether West Coast were a bit tired from their recent...
So 6-day break, heavy track against Richmond, tough
I think
game.
There was a bit of that. But Duff, you know, it's a 6-day break. There is so much to lose and everything to gain, and I just did not expect them to cough that up. I was quite stunned watching the game. Hawthorn's a good side and very well coached and very well structured, but they're not that good, and not at this stage. So I just think they gave them a bit... They allowed them to dictate terms, which I thought was average from a team that I rate.
So in 2008, of course, West Coast upset... Hawthorn upset Geelong, claimed that first of the four flags that Alistair Clarkson has won.
The Shark.
There was the legend of that was, we're going to stop the Shark. The Shark has to move to survive. We're going to stop the Shark in its tracks. I reckon that there was an element of stopping the Shark on Saturday night. And you mentioned the on the mark stuff. It was the speed to which they got up to get on the mark, to me. They slowed them down and they stopped them from that change of direction and the free wheel. They knew when they were going to change direction, and they got over there and they made the guy go back and take his kick.
It was like a wall. It was a wall across half forward. They just couldn't get through.
And I think they couldn't get through because they couldn't get quick ball movement to get through there. Usually West Coast switches, gets the spare man on the outer side and just, you know, moves effortlessly inside attacking 50. And it enabled them to get away with playing Ben McAvoy as a tall defender.
Now,
basically.
What a great move that was too. Something which will be food for thought for next year. I quite rate Seglar. I think he's a pretty good player.
Mm.
So, you know, that'll be something Clarko looks at on a more regular basis. As long as it's on Hawthorn's terms, I wouldn't want him to be on a quick player with the ball coming in repeatedly.
No,
in
you don't want him playing there when there's a losing midfield.
But I think then they can change tactics. But I think when it's on their terms, I think him in the defence, a key post in defence, works really well. I think that was one of the key figures in that game.
I thought the move was Sean Burgoyne onto Jeremy McGovern.
Yep.
And hilarious, Clarko after the game, typical coach. I asked him about the moves, the two moves, basically. Yeah. McAvoy's a tall defender and Burgoyne on McGovern. And he made a lot of the McAvoy one. He said, you know, in the 60s and 70s, Ruckman used to win Brownlow medals by playing a kick behind the play. And we're talking about guys like Len Thompson and Gary Dempsey.
Yeah, I heard that interview, yeah.
And he said, you know, Ben plays very well in that role, so we decided to put him behind the ball. And I said, well, what about Burgoyne? He said, oh, well, that just happened by accident. You know, like we were going to play Scrimshaw in defence, which means we've been playing Sean in defence. We had to put him somewhere. So we decided, oh, we'll put him down the other end. At the same time, Bridget Lacey, our former colleague, was in the Hawthorn rooms working for ABC. She interviewed Sean Burgoyne and she asked about the move to play on McGovern. Yeah, Clarko told me very early in the week I was going to be playing on McGovern. So it wasn't any bloody accident. It was a great move.
Nothing ever is.
No, it was a great move. And you know the great thing about Sean Burgoyne? Often when coaches decide to nut a dominant defender like McGovern, they put a bit of a scrubber on them and they try and make it a scrap. The great thing about Burgoyne is that every time McGovern didn't pay him due respect, Burgoyne made him pay. And he didn't kick 0-3. He didn't kick 1-2 and hit the post. He didn't butcher opportunities. He kicked 3 goals.
Yep.
And that's the great beauty of playing a class player on a play you think can be exposed defensively. And I think that was a terrific move.
No, it was a frustrating year for the Hawks, really. But I think ninth, they did have a hard fixture, but, you know, that coughed up a loss to the Western Bulldogs when they were well in control of the game earlier in the year. And you know what? The Doggies deserve that more than Hawthorn do. They had a terrific finish to the year. So I think it's sort of finished about where it should.
So the Doggies beat Adelaide by 34 points. I think Adelaide had to kick 5 of the last 6 goals to make it that close.
Again, it was the start, wasn't it?
How far can they go, do you think?
Doggies, I reckon, will go to... They'll win a final, I reckon. They'll win a final. Where have I got them in my little calculus here? I've got the Doggies. Well, they'll beat GWS, and then they meet Richmond week 2. That's where I've got them.
They go all right against Richmond.
Yeah, this is a final. I just reckon, you know, I like the Tigers at the moment. The Dogs have. I mean, now we've got Bailey Dale kicking 5 at the weekend.
Mm.
So Norton's had we all know about Norton, but I guess the question mark you had, there was a question mark at both ends on the Bulldogs,
yep.
But I think we don't have that anymore. I think we don't have question marks, and let's not even start on the midfield. It's got as good a depth as any team. So they are a real threat. You don't want to be playing them. But I think the team that will stop them will be Richmond in week 2. Unless the Giants manufacture something and the Dogs believe the hype, start listening to too much of the hype, then I can't see them losing week 1.
Okay. So if you're West Coast, Nick Natanui plays, period.
Yeah,
and gets through training.
Anything's
and plays.
Possible. Anything's possible, depending on what you hear. I mean, the news you hear on Nick Nat isn't good in terms of his longevity.
Mm.
So this might be his last roll of the dice. So you'd like to think that this is a special September for Nick Nat, because if it is, Eagles can go a long way. But he is really important to them now. They need a kickstart of some sort, Duff, because the last 7 quarters have not been good. And it's been a really important time to get those quarters, you know, right. So I still have faith, but, gee, that top four, losing that top four spot is crucial.
Yeah, me too. I think the travel is going to be a massive barrier for them to overcome now.
What an amazing final round in terms of the Brownlow medal too. You looked at, so you'd 3 votes Dangerfield, 3 votes Neil, 3 votes probably Bontempelli. So I think it'll come down to Dangerfield and Neil, myself. I think Bon and Pedal will be right up there. But you've got Cripps, you've got Kelly, you've got Fife. And, of course, Grundy and Gawn could be the year of the Ruckman. But But those three, it's going to go right down to the wire, this Brownlow medal. It's really exciting.
Who would you like to see win it?
Who would I like? I would like to see Bontempelli win it. I love him as a footballer, and I just think it does tend to frank a player once they win one. Dangerfield deserves one. Lachie Neale really deserves one. I just want to see the Bont.
I would love to see Brodie Grundy win it.
Yeah, to see a ruckman. Yeah, that's a really good call, Duff, because last ruckman to win it was Scott Wine, am I right?
Well, technically probably Adam Goods in 03.
Yeah,
played some footy in the
ruck. But a pure number one ruckman,
yep.
You'd say Scott Wine in 92.
Scott Wine in 92 would be the last one.
So absolutely. Before that, there were quite a few through the 70s and 80s, but the game...
Jimmy Stein's 91.
Yeah, Jimmy Stein. Well, you had Len Thompson, you had...
Peter Moore twice.
One of them... probably played as much as ruck as he did forward pocket, I reckon.
Graham Teasdale in the velour jacket.
The brown velour jacket. He arrived, he was not at the Brownlow count, and he was well in front, and he got the phone call from the VFL saying, you've got to get to the Brownlow count, you're a chance here. So he turned up without a suit, and the only one they had was this brown velour suit in the cloakroom. So the folklore was just by accident, but it's the worst ever, ever suit worn to a Brownlow medal, and he just happened to win it that year.
All right, and of course, Quarters, what's happening tomorrow is that the AFL All-Australian Selectors...
Jeez, how tough was this?
...are naming their team for 2019. So let's...
And let's just say from the outset, this is really tough to do. There's a lot of great candidates who miss out. And so before you start whacking the All-Australian Selectors, you can whack us first because we're about to give you our teams. And it was really tough, Duff. And you're leaving players out. You're trying to make a way for them to get back in, but you can't. Do you want mine first?
Yep.
So I've got from the back line, Stewart, Andrews and Hearn, and I'm naming Hearn captain.
Yep.
Be interesting that because last year the captaincy was to Buddy Franklin, which was controversial. He's not a captain. I think it should go to a captain, by the way, if they get in. But anyway, so Stewart, Andrews, Hearn. I've got Yeo, McGovern and Grimes. Across the centre line, I've got Bontempelli, Fife and Dunkley. Half forward, Martin, Jeremy Cameron, Dangerfield. Full forward line, Charlie Cameron, Brown and Darling. And the Ruck Rovers, Grundy, Cripps, Neale. And I've got interchange, McRae, Shepherd, Duncan and Gorn. And apologies to Kelly Gaff, Shuey Zorko, Jake Lloyd, Boak, among others.
Okay, I'm going, and I'm going to be a bit controversial here as far as West Australians go. Grimes, Andrews, Hearn, and Hearn is my captain. Stewart, Sicily, Shepherd. I'm leaving Jeremy McGovern out. Mm-hmm. I think there were four or five times this year when Jeremy McGovern got exposed. Yeo, Cripps, and Tim Kelly across the middle. Dusty Martin, Jack Darling, Paddy Dangerfield across half forward. Michael Walters, Jeremy Cameron, Charlie Cameron across the forward line. Brodie Grundy, Nathan Fyfe, and Lachie Neale as my ruck. And my interchange is Boak, Gorn, Bontempelli. And I'm going to throw one in from outside of the 40 that I reckon is one that they've all missed. Jack Crisp from Collingwood.
Yeah, has had a great year. This is the beauty of this. It's subjective, but you can make an argument for them all. Jack Cripps would be a very worthy All-Australian, absolutely. But I'd have to leave out players I put ahead of him this year, and that's just purely subjective.
So you didn't have Ablett? No Ablett?
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
I think he's been very good, but again, there's players ahead of him.
Tapered towards the back half of the year too, I reckon.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. If he is named, look out for this one. Here's some controversy. If they're going to name Buddy last year, as captain. If Ablett gets named, do not discount them naming him captain.
Yeah, I agree, which I think would be a grave injustice to Shannon Hearn.
I agree. Shannon Hearn should have been All-Australian captain last year, and they tend to do it this way. If you tend to miss out and there's a bit of yap about it, you get it the next time you deserve it.
I think the problem is there wasn't much yap about it over there.
Well, it was from here.
Yeah, no, yeah. They don't hear us over here.
Well,
we've got to talk louder.
They do have we do have representation on the selection panel. So
we do. Yes, I'll give you that much.
So that's tomorrow night, and then we've got the MVP on Thursday. Is that right? Yeah, the Lee Matthews Medal, the MVP on Thursday. So yes. That could go. You know.
So is the Lee Matthews Medal, is that the Coaches Association Medal or is that the AFL Players Association
Medal? It's the Players Association Medal, I'm pretty sure.
Is that the one, if you're a player, is that the one you
want to
win?
You can't vote on your own. No. You want to win the Brownlow.
I know the Brownlow, but aside from the Brownlow, there's the AFL-CA
Award. So it's like, I look at it like the Melbourne Cup and the Cox Plate. Everyone wants to win the Melbourne Cup, but the Cox Plate, really, you've earned hard. It's harder to earn. It's harder to win. It's wait for age. So I reckon that's the difference. I reckon the MVP is the Cox Plate.
Yep.
And I reckon the Melbourne Cup is the Brownlow.
Okay. All right. Moving right along. What did you make of Fremantle's wind-up week?
Gee, it was a big week. Everything was happening. What I made of it, Dale Alcock, I thought, as chairman, I thought it was a little bit, I was a bit disappointed with him during the course of events last year. I didn't think he showed enough leadership. He was not to be heard on many occasions.
Yeah.
But I really think he stood up tall this week. I think he showed great leadership at a really difficult time for the club. So I like that about what happened at Freo this week. We've spoken, you know, ad nauseum about Ross Lyon. And I liked your column the other day on just get the process right. I think you're right. I think Longmuir and Sumich are the two front runners, probably with Longmuir ahead.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
But let's hope they go through the process, interview other people, because as Hawthorne found out with Alistair Clarkson, sometimes candidates jump out at you, interview really well, and it's someone you may not have considered is the one who takes you to Nirvana.
Absolutely. And I think that particularly where Fremantle are at the moment, it's not often you get to almost like a blank sheet of paper and you get to reshape your club. And this is one of those moments for Fremantle. So as well as crisis, it also represents opportunity. I mean, people will forget how low Hawthorn were at the end of 2004.
I don't. I was back in Melbourne and I was going to the MCG every weekend, Duff, and we were copping 100-point floggings.
You were. Yeah. But even before then, it was kind of like an unfulfilled era,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Was.
You know, you were...
Yeah. You, making prelims, but not really being good enough to get anywhere close under Schwabe.
You almost got back into the finals under Ken Judge in 1999
yes.
when you made the late surge and Crawford was in such... red-hot form. In 2000, they made finals out first week under Peter Schwab, then the prelim the next year. And we thought Hawthorn were the next big thing.
Mm.
We thought this was another golden era of Hawthorn. And then it just didn't happen. For whatever reason, it didn't happen. And at the end of 2004, you know, Peter Schwab, a loyal servant of the Hawthorn Football Club, great person, he gets sacked. The club is on, you know, it's in the depths of despair. I think they didn't have a CEO. I think Jason Dunster was acting as interim CEO.
He was, yeah.
At that time, which made him a central figure in the coach selection
process.
That's
right, and of course, Dermot and other committee members really wanted a Hawthorn person in there. So you had Gary Ayres, Rodney Eade.
Yep. Terry Wallace.
Terry Wallace was a big candidate.
And even Lee Matthews. They were even talking let's get Lee out of
they
Brisbane.
They were. And then Clarkson just hit the ball out the park in the interview.
Yeah.
Just saw footy, not how he could win it the next couple of years, but what he could do to change the game 4 or 5 years down the track and how Hawthorn would be at the pointy end when that happened. And I think Dunstall just loved hearing that and just managed to convince them that, make no mistake, Dunstall is the man who got Clarkson to Hawthorn.
Yep.
Clarkson got himself there by interviewing so well, but Dunstall got him over the line. So, you know, all the plaudits you hear about Dunstall's involvement in that are deserved.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's hope, the point we're trying to make is Fremantle get it right. And if it's Longmuir, it's Longmuir. If it's Sumer, it's Sumer. But do not discount someone coming from the outside and just blowing out of the park. And, you know, that's a possibility.
Absolutely it is. There's a lot of people we don't think a lot of over here. And I don't mean we don't think a lot of them. I mean we don't think of them a lot.
Just as people from over in the West are sometimes not considered over East.
Yeah.
It's the same. So, you know, let's just cover all the bases and we want them to get it right. Let's hope there's some silverware around the corner for you, Duff.
Yeah, well, been waiting. I just want to see him back in contention.
I want to see him win one.
Well, yeah, but you've got to be in contention before you win one.
Of course, yes.
And the more years you're in contention, like I would have liked to have seen the five final appearances in 6 years become sort of 8 in 9 years.
Yep.
And I reckon if you make another grand final, the odds are you win one.
Yep, yeah.
So they've just come up, you know, a little bit shy out of that era. And I think it's important to... And I think the other thing that's really important is get their list management right. You know, there's going to be a big decision to be made for them, assuming that Brad Hill stands up and says, I want to be traded. One, there's a big decision to be made for them in terms of, okay, do we stand our ground? He's got 2 years of a contract to run, or do we let him go? And if we let him go and we can harvest one or two first-round draft picks, do we just hand him over to Geelong to get Tim Kelly, or is there a different way to look at this? Can we load up on more young talent, and can we add more young talent and maybe build a super list in 4 years' time?
Yeah, I think they need to balance that, but I think the absolute priority should be to get Kelly to Freo. I think they need some hope, and I think they need a win. And they can have a win before round one next year. I reckon they really need a win at the moment, Freo. And not just grabbing Kelly at any cost, but I think they need to look at how. And they've had some good success at the draft table in recent years.
Mm.
So it's not unfamiliar territory for them, but they have got the ball in their hands. It's in their favour. Hill's contracted for 2 years.
Yep.
So it's on their terms. So if they can get this right, this could be a real win-win for a couple of clubs.
Interestingly enough, Quarters, Stephen Hill re-signed Fremantle today.
Yes, well, there's a lot of speculation about him not doing so. So
I don't think there were many offers for Stephen Hill. And I think what it came down to with Stephen, as I said a number of times, is that Stephen is a professional footballer. I initially thought the offer from Fremantle was likely to be one.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were only going to offer him one and someone else was going to offer him two or three, then really he was compelled to go. As it is, they've offered him two. It'll be interesting to know what they paid. You would like to think that given he's got a fairly sketchy injury track record in the last two seasons, that if it's 2 years, that maybe they've lowered the wage a little bit.
Really big fan of Stephen Hill at his best, and I really just have my fingers crossed that they get his soft tissues right. I want to see him back out there, and we want to see him somewhere near his best would be good enough, I reckon, because he's better than most. He's a terrific footballer.
Yeah, I think all things being equal, well, like we've talked ad nauseum about how well Brad's played this year, but I think a fit Stephen is a better player than a fit Brad. So
yeah.
I think let's hope he gets back out.
And Ed,
there.
Ed Langdon will appear somewhere in there too. He wants out. Can I just mention one of the games that probably meant the least, but Sydney v St Kilda at the weekend. I loved this game for what it produced late. The McVeigh and Jack stuff and Buddy's 300th. I love the fact that Hanbury got involved in cheering them off, a player from the opposition side. Now, I just love that. For me, that was just footy. You know, you just forget what an association he had with those guys, played in a premiership with them. So that for me, just put a little exclamation mark on the weekend.
Of course, Richard Douglas played his last game for Adelaide as well. He got cheered off at
Jordan Lewis.
Ballarat, Geordie Lewis. Down in interesting touch. Geordie interviewed Ruffy the week before, and Ruffy interviewed Geordie this week.
That was great, yeah. And Ruffy had the choice. Apparently, he didn't know whether to go. He wasn't coming to Perth, but he didn't know. He was a bit torn. Was he going to go up for Buddy's 300th in Sydney, or was he going to go to Geordie's last game?
He knows he's going to get another chance with Buddy.
That's right. So that's why. And Jordan and he's close to Buddy, but he and Geordie are very, very close. So, he'll get another chance with Buddy. He'll be his final game. So it's a pretty easy decision to make in the end, although he did have to go down to Hobart.
Didn't that North Melbourne game sum up Melbourne's season?
Oh, Neil Bullen. Neil Bullen missing the shot.
Running into an open goal with 30 seconds left.
That's it, Melbourne. You know what I say if you're a Melbourne supporter? Just use it all up now.
Park it.
I won't have him in my eight, though. I need convincing again.
Yeah, I agree. It took him a long time to convince us last year, and we finally got convinced. We all jumped on board the bus, and we ended up in the snowfields.
Oh, we did. Oh, yeah. We jumped on the bus, and about four-fifths of the way in the trip, they started putting chains on. But what are you doing? Oh, we're going to Hotham. and we should just mention, just before we close out, a lot of going on in South Australia, mate. There's a review now at Adelaide. It's an external review, which would make a few people nervous.
Well, you know what the worry with a review is? You generally don't start a review until you know the answer before you've started.
That's right, and it's an external review, which I think would make people very nervous. And look, and Port, who managed to scrape a win against Freo, who on the back of, Freo very gettable and on the back of a huge week. So, I think Don Pike, with 2 years of his contract, I'd be really surprised if he's not coaching there next year.
Mm.
And I think Hinkley coaches, but I'm just watch this space, I reckon.
Hinkley, I think, well, certainly...
He's got the 1 year.
They'd almost have to shift Keith Thomas after the way Keith Thomas spoke out in support of Hinkley, sort of do an a la Ross Lyon, Steve Rosich removal.
Yeah. Well,
it does happen.
Yeah, sure does.
Mark Ricciuto, you wouldn't say he was unequivocal in his support of Don Pike when he spoke yesterday.
No. And Ricciuto has a lot of influence at that football club.
He does.
And if you think he's outspoken on the field. I'm sure off the field there's a lot happening there. And I think that it's unacceptable what's happened to Adelaide the last two, since their grand final appearance 2 seasons ago. Unacceptable. So absolutely they need an external review of that club. They're better than that.
All right. We'll be back on Thursday to talk about more of the comings and going this week. We'll see some list changes. We'll see some probably a clearer view of the coaching field at Fremantle.
We won't get me wrong this weekend either, Duff.
That's handy. How many did you get?
Oh, yeah, well, I should have picked Hawthorn. 8.
Yeah, you've little faith.
Well, they're playing over here at Optus Stadium with West Coast needing to win to finish top four. Well, you know, you work it out.
And okay, now you ran a marathon.
I did.
Were you inspired to run a quick time?
No. Well, I was, but I didn't. I finished it. One of the toughest days at the office I've ever had. It was on Sunday. It's a city to surf. I'll just tell you a very quick little story. As I finished, I was absolutely spent, had nothing left to give. It was about 400 metres to go, just as you come down Oceanic Drive to turn into West Coast Highway.
Yep.
And I was running down the field, having a bit of a sook, just feeling like my world was collapsing around me. And my two boys, Liam and Tom, jumped the fence and ran up to me. And I just stood in the track and wept. I'll admit that. It was just a really special moment. And they actually finished the marathon with me. So the last 300-400 metres was a really nice moment and very helpful given where I was at that particular point in time. Not too flash, I can tell you.
Okay.
Jeez, beers were nice that night, I tell you.
And lastly, before we go, Did you stay up and watch Ben Stokes?
You know what? Australian. I stayed up as long as I could. I got to about 10:30 and then I was just gone. I had to go to bed. And as I went to bed, I put ABC radio on, which I love listening to the cricket on radio. And I just listened to it for a while and it was just getting to the stage where, we should have enough, but this is not. I've just got great fears about where this is going. And then, of course, I woke up in the morning and went through it all. And I've got to say, a very disappointing defeat, one that we should not have lost, but sometimes you just stand back and applaud sport, and that is one of the greatest innings you'll ever see from Stokes.
Yeah, that's the way I viewed it. Take a bow, Ben Stokes.
It's a sensational two-paced innings. Defended when he had to and just went at the bowlers when he had to, like got Hazelwood when he was tired, went at Lyon. Just a beautifully crafted innings with so much at stake and a lot of pressure. Whether you like Ben Stokes or not for what he's done, the pressure on that bloke, given we know the English media, what they throw out, the London media, so deserves all the plaudits for that innings that he gets.
And the lesson learned for the Aussies is don't stop trying to get one of the batsmen out.
Yeah.
Which is what they did.
And think about your reviews too.
Yeah, that's right. Don't waste a review.
Oh.
All right. Thank you for joining us today. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch. Quarters and I will be back again on Thursday to talk more finals footy with you. And we look forward to chatting with you then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch.